Shrink Wrap Radio number 303, Exploring Synchronicity with Jungian analyst Dr. Jeffrey Raff.
It's Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make it dangerous. It's all in your head. And now here's your host, Dr. Dave.
You may recall today's guest, Dr. Jeffrey Raff, from Shrink Wrap Radio number 290 on ally work. Today we'll be discussing his views and experiences in relation to synchronicity. Jeffrey Raff, Ph.D., is co-founder of the C.G. Jung Institute of Denver and a senior Jungian analyst who's been in private practice in Denver since 1976. Trained in Zurich in the early 1970s, Dr. Raff is the author of four books, including Jung and the Alchemical Imagination, The Wedding of Sophia, and The Practice of Ally Work. He's written many articles on alchemy, the Kabbalah, and the nature of evil. Currently president of the C.G. Jung Institute of Denver, Dr. Raff is also an adjunct professor at Pacifica Graduate Institute and a training analyst in the Interregional Society of Jungian Analysts, and has taught numerous workshops and classes all over the country. Now, here's the interview. Dr. Jeffrey Raff, welcome back to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be back.
Yes, back in December, you and I spoke about your adventures in ally work, and that interview received a lot of listener reaction and comments, and so I'm glad to have you back on the show again. This time we're going to talk about synchronicity.
Right.
So I guess the place to start is, what is synchronicity? How do you define it?
Well, synchronicity is an idea that Jung formulated pretty early in his career, but never really wrote about until much later. I think he wanted to have a chance to develop the idea more, and also was concerned about his reputation a little bit, because this is one of those ideas of his that's pretty far out.
Yeah, right. And a lot of people have gotten blasted for venturing off into this territory.
That's right. That's right. He did it in a couple of articles published, as I say, pretty late in his career. I think actually all the way in the 50s. And what he was concerned with was what he called meaningful coincidence. He was very interested in chance events, seemingly random events that with no apparent causation occur in someone's life with a great deal of impact, both in terms of a sense of meaning that they have and also a certain kind of feeling that they create. And it might be good to start with a couple of examples.
Yeah, I agree.
The most famous one is the one that Jung himself offers in his essay, and that was he was talking to a client in an analytic session, and the client was a pretty rational woman, very skeptical about the reality of the inner world and the unconscious. But she had had a dream about a scarab beetle the week before the session with Jung, and as she was talking to him about this dream, they heard a buzzing at the window, and Jung got up and opened the window, and in flew a beetle. So he was struck, and she was struck also, by the apparent coincidence of this, that they were talking about a dream about a beetle, and then a real beetle flew into the room. So that's kind of a rudimentary example of
and I remember that story, and I gather that the beetle actually that appeared was rather scarab looking, which is what she had dreamt
exactly.
about,
which is fairly unusual for Switzerland.
Yeah, that was another key point.
Yes,
and there are sort of more prosaic examples that I think most people have experienced, such as thinking about a friend that you haven't heard from in years and years, And then the phone rings and they're there, or these days they Facebook you.
Yeah, exactly. It's a little less thrilling than it used to be because of Facebook, I think. But yeah, that's one really good example. I had a synchronicity when I was 14, which always stayed with me and was one of the reasons that I became very interested in this topic. And that was, at this point, I had just gotten my first pair of glasses, which, of course, is always a traumatic event in high school. But I got up for school. Everyone else had left. I was getting ready to catch the school bus, and I couldn't find my glasses. And I got into a panic because I was going to be late, and I needed my glasses, and I couldn't remember where they were. I could look everywhere for them. And at this time also, I don't know if you remember the old ant farms that we used to get as kids.
Yeah.
You'd get this plastic container with a little package of ants, and they would build a little farm. Well, I had just gotten one about a month before, and all the ants that I had ordered died in the mail, which was fairly common. So being enterprising, I went outside and collected ants and put them in the farm. But what I didn't realize was that if you take ants from different nests, they'll fight with each other. They don't get along very well.
Oh.
And so I put all these ants in there, and they all started fighting with each other and killing each other. And I thought that was kind of interesting and somewhat neat. It was kind of like your own gladiator game. You know how it is at 14.
Yes. Yeah, the shadow is strong.
Yeah, very strong. So I'm running around looking for my glasses, and I come into my room where the ant farm is, and I have this really powerful thought that it was wrong what I was doing to use the ant farm in the way that I was doing. It was just wrong to put ants in there and kill them and so on. And it was so strong that I stopped looking for my glasses and picked up the ant farm. And at that time, we had trash cans buried in the ground way down at the end of the driveway. And I took the ant farm down there. The trash had just been emptied the day before. So the trash cans were empty. And I lifted up the can, the top of the trash can, to throw the ant farm away. And at the bottom of the trash can were my glasses.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I still have no idea how that could possibly have happened. There was no rational way that I know of that they could have gotten there. But that
at this age, that kind of thing happens to me all the time, that I've put things where they don't belong. But
right.
Presumably, this was well before that kind of phenomenon had set in for you.
Yeah. And the interesting thing about it was that it had such a powerful emotional effect on it.
And that's one of the components of synchronicity, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, the emotional part is one of the most powerful components. So what you have in a synchronicity is two events. One that's considered an inner event, like a dream image or a thought, a vision. And at the same time that you're concerned with that inner event, there's an outer event that occurs, which strikes you as connected to the inner event.
Yes, and you mentioned dreams. I regularly have dreams, and I don't know whether to call it precognitive or synchronistic, but something happens the next day, something very minor, nothing very dramatic, but something that really feels like, oh, this is somehow a result of what I dreamt last night.
Or connected to it in some way.
Connected to it in some way. There's an example that's sort of on the fringe of my mind here, and hopefully I can bring it back. I should have consulted my dream journal. I know I wrote it down. It was something about, I'm trying to remember now, it was something about getting sprayed with water, with like I just don't remember the details, but I remember being sprayed with water. Either I was spraying someone or someone was dumping water on me or something. And I told my wife about it when I woke up that morning. And then as I'm reading the paper later in the Zitz comic strip, which is a comic strip about a teenager growing up, and he has written on his parents' car, which was very dusty, he wrote, "Wash me." And in the next panel of the strip, you see his mother squirting him with a hose. And he's saying, "No, no, no, I meant the car, not me." And that just, you know, brought back that image. And a lot of times from my dream, and a lot of times people will say, "Oh, well, you just think you dreamt that because now this thing has happened and it seems to ring some kind of a vague bell." But, you know, there are several cases where I've told my wife or somebody else about the dream before that synchronistic event happens.
Yeah, that's precognition. Jung would consider precognition a kind of synchronicity.
Mm-hmm.
It would fall into his definition of synchronicity, because what you have again is a outer event that's coming and in some fashion resonates with the inner event.
Do we have any sense of why, at least in my case, and I've heard this is true for others, that it always seems so insignificant? You know, it doesn't seem to be, I'm not foreseeing some earth-shaking event by which I could avert disaster for myself or others.
Well, it depends. I mean, there are synchronicities that seem really powerful and life-changing. There are certainly synchronistic events that don't seem minor. The minor ones are interesting. The one of the parts of the definition of synchronicity is includes what we just talked about in terms of strong affect, a kind of affect that Jung calls numinous.
Yes.
And when you have an experience of a synchronicity, you should have a numinous feeling with it. It gives you chills or makes your hair stand up a little bit. It's uncanny in some way.
Yeah, I love that word, numinous and numinosity, and just the whole, and the way that you've just described it is I've not heard it described in quite that way, but it really captures the feeling tone of it.
Yeah, yeah. So little synchronicities, if we can call them that, if they don't have a numinous feeling connected with them, Jung would be more or less indifferent to it. It's like, well, maybe that's a synchronicity, maybe it's falling on the cusp, or maybe he would say it's just chance.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike the Chinese, who influenced his thinking about this, Jung doesn't believe that everything is meaningful. He only believes that certain chance events carry meaning. And uh-huh. we'll know that by the amount of feeling that it generates for us.
When you talk about him being influenced by the Chinese, maybe that's worth focusing on a little bit. In what way was he influenced?
He was influenced by the Chinese concept of the Tao. He was very interested, of course, in the I Ching. And in the Tao Te Ching and a number of the Taoist works, and in his study of the I Ching especially, he was influenced by Chinese thought on synchronicity, because the whole idea of the I Ching, like any oracle, is if you throw coins, which is an outer event, it will match up with the Tao or the meaning of a particular moment.
Mm-hmm.
And he was really struck by the fact that the German translator of the I Ching, Richard Wilhelm, translated the Tao in German as sin, S-I-N-N, which translates in English to meaning. So Jung speculated, based on these ideas, that meaning was actually a force in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
That we could experience meaning that isn't just subjective, but also has an objective quality to it.
Hmm.
I find this idea particularly fascinating. He kind of dances around it. Sometimes he seems to be saying we can only understand synchronicity as a result of this objective meaning, and other times he seems to back away from it. But the idea that there is a force in the universe that brings things together, that orders events based not on causality, but on meaning, is a very interesting idea.
Indeed it is, and somehow that has a little bit of a familiar ring. I'm not sure what it is that's tickling the edges of my mind here, but an ordering force in the universe.
Well, I'm not sure. I mean,
you can't maybe read my mind.
He was very interested in the possibility that quantum physics would come up with ideas of this sort.
Yeah.
There are certainly some ideas in quantum physics that resonate with synchronicity, because quantum physics gets away from the idea of causality. And that's another important thing about synchronicity. These events, like the scarab, the dream of the scarab beetle and a beetle coming into your window, are obviously, they're not causally related. There's no way your dream could cause a beetle to come to you, or for me to find my glasses. There was no causality. You could say, if I hadn't taken the ant farm out, I wouldn't have found my glasses, but deciding to do that didn't cause my glasses to be there.
Mm-hmm.
So we get past the notion that everything that we experience in life is causal, because I had a certain experience when I was 10, I'm going to be like this at 15 and like that at 20 and so on. Rather, we can say that things come together in your life that are not causally related, but they're meaningful.
What about chaos theory? Does that have any applicability here? Not that I'm well versed in it, but my sense of it is that chaos theory allows for patterns in nature that look to be meaningful.
Yeah, you know, I probably know less than you about chaos theory. I do know that some of the writings, current writings on synchronicity, do refer to chaos theory as a possible paradigm that would work, partly because of the idea of patterns and probably getting away from causality as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think there would be a relationship to any theory that speculated that there is a formative principle that is not necessarily causal. There are biological theories like that too, you know, of the form of a tree creating the actual tree rather than the tree coming from the acorn.
Boy, that's a Platonic idea. Plato felt that there were ideal forms out there, and that everything that we see is somehow represented somewhere else in its ideal form.
Right. And, of course, Jung bridges the Platonic idea to the modern world through his idea of the archetypes. And one of the, the archetype is a universal pattern of behavior or a universal pattern of perception. And one of the ways that he brings the archetype into the theory of synchronicity is he argues that possibly the way that you discover a meaning of a particular synchronicity is discovering the archetype that's activated at that moment. So if you can discover what archetype is behind the particular image, then you might understand the meaning of the experience. For example, the scarab beetle is a archetypal image of rebirth and resurrection. It was very widely used in ancient Egypt to represent rebirth. So we could say that the experience of that synchronicity for the woman, Jung's client, had to do with rebirth for herself. Mm-hmm. In some way.
Yeah, yeah, I could see where that could be a powerful guiding thought.
One of the things that I do sometimes when I'm teaching about this is to have people make a little diagram of the major synchronicities that they might remember in their lifetime, and put them in a kind of chronological order, and then tease out the images that are connected to those synchronicities and see if they can see an archetypal pattern behind all of them.
Can you remember an example like that, either from a student or from your own life?
Let's see. I could tell you another example, early example for myself, as an image of that. I think it was 1973, I was in Zurich studying at the Jung Institute, and I had a dream about the Russian dissident Solzhenitsyn.
Yeah.
And I couldn't remember the dream, but I knew he was the star of that dream. And I was woke up early, and I was thinking about what could he mean to me. And, of course, he was a very famous dissident in the Soviet Union, who was fighting at that time for more freedom for the Russian people. So for me, he represented a kind of image of freedom. And as I was thinking about that, my radio went off, the radio alarm that I set went off, and it was the news, and it was announcing that Solzhenitsyn had just been expelled from the Soviet Union that morning.
Wow.
So, yeah, so of course that made the dream even more powerful. And later that day, my wife and I decided we were going to go shopping in Zurich. And we went to downtown Zurich, and we were walking by the train station, and we saw this crowd of people. And I said, I'm going to go over there and see what that commotion is about. Well, he had just arrived in Zurich. When they expelled him from Russia, they sent him to Switzerland.
That very next day after your dream?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that same morning.
Yeah.
So that's what we call seriality. In other words, there was more than one synchronicity. There was the radio going off and then actually running into him and getting to see him.
That's a good one. And I had not heard of that seriality phenomenon before, but I actually, there's one that has stayed in my mind that I guess would be an example of that, where I had a dream of one of my colleagues. I encountered him in a dream, one of my university colleagues, and I realized in the dream that he looked somewhat different. I knew it was him, but he looked different. And I said, Barry, you look different. Did you change your hair? And he said, yes. I said, no, that's not quite it. I said, did you have a beard before and you cut it off? He said, yes. And that still didn't feel quite right. And finally I said, I know, you've had a head transplant, haven't you? And he said, yes. Well, head transplant was not anything that I can ever recall having thought about or read about or anything. But the next day, I was reading a book by, I think it was Marilyn Ferguson, called The Aquarian Revolution. I'm impressed that I can remember that right now. And one of the paragraphs started off saying, things are moving so fast these days that some people are even speculating about the possibility of head transplants.
Wow.
So that was synchronicity number one. Then later on that evening, I was... Then in the paper that same day, there was a story about a Japanese woman who had cut off her son's head. And then in the late afternoon, it happened that I was teaching a psychology class to a group of police officers in Santa Rosa. And one of them was telling a story in which he... it was something about he was so angry that he wanted to cut the person's head off, or somehow that same theme came up again.
Yeah, that's the repetition of the same motif. And that's a good example too. If you wanted to play around with that idea of the dream, you know, you start out with a haircut and cutting off a beard or something, and those are minor changes, right? But a head transplant would be rather a large transformation, one would think.
Yes.
So it's possible, just, you know, talking off the top of my head, so to speak, that the archetype behind that kind of that synchronicity for you is that it would be about transformation also.
Yes, and I wish that was closer in so I could remember what else was going on around that time, but I certainly wouldn't discount that.
Yeah. So finding the archetype is one way that we can try and work objectively with the experience and see if we can get a deeper insight into what it could mean to us. Sometimes the synchronicity, you just know. I mean, it's so powerful and clear, like the one with the Russian dissident was to me so much about freedom, which was a big issue for me at that time, trying to free myself from my old personal habits and right in the middle of a very powerful analytic process. So I was very taken with that and believe that it was really about that need to liberate myself.
Yeah, and I even had the hit when you were telling it, and I just want to test this out with you. I was wondering if you were fighting any of the ideas that you were being exposed to at the Jung Institute, if you were struggling to find your way and your own freedom among those.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. Yep. There was definitely a need to free myself from having to fit into certain Jungian expectations or ideas that didn't really match what I was experiencing.
Yeah.
And that, of course, was a very difficult thing to do in a situation like that, an institute in a foreign country where that was your community, but at the same time you had to define yourself in opposition to that community in the way that he did in the Soviet Union. So, yeah, that would be a good interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of synchronicity gives you a lot of conviction that this is the right track, that this is something important to you and meaningful and something to struggle for.
When you're seeing people in analysis, and I would imagine that sometimes they would come up with a synchronicity, would you direct them to look for the possible archetypal connection?
Yeah, it depends. Again, the first thing I want to do is really hear about the feeling that it evokes. Is it really numinous? What was the sense of it? What did it have sometimes, as I say, it has an instant aha connected to it. And sometimes it's very mysterious. You really don't know what it's about. And when it's mysterious like that, then I really recommend studying the archetype and playing with the symbols. Because even if you can't figure it out intellectually, what that usually will do is stimulate another dream and sometimes another synchronicity, which will give you more information about the meaning of what's going on at that moment.
You know, speaking of another synchronicity, there have been periods in my life, particularly one period, where I had what I guess I would call a run of synchronicities. I mean, it was just synchronicity after synchronicity that all seemed to be leading somewhere. And forgot what I was going to ask you about that, other than just to say, what about that phenomenon?
And yeah, you do definitely see that. There are periods in your inner work or development or something going on in your life situation that opens up a real period of growth or potential growth. And that's when you would expect more synchronicities to occur. Because there's something big happening within your unconscious, and it kind of sets up a pattern, and then that pattern replicates itself in a variety of synchronicities.
When that happens for me, or even in these minor synchronicities that I mentioned earlier, I sort of tend to take them as a reminder that there's something bigger going on than my conscious mind is aware of, because by and large, I'm a pretty concrete, down-to-earth kind of person and reasonably literal. And so I think I need to be woken up.
Uh-huh.
And I think maybe that's the role that these synchronicities play for me.
Yeah. And that's another layer of meaning, and of trying to understand the meaning of them. We talked about the archetype that might be behind a particular synchronicity. Another layer of meaning, definitely for almost everyone who has these experiences, is the realization that something is happening that's much larger than the normal perception of reality that we have. Again, because you're talking about things that are not causally connected, and yet when they come together, strike you with such force that you feel like something brought them into your life. Like, it's almost like a miracle that a religious person might call a synchronicity a miracle that just happened.
Yeah.
And so definitely part of the meaning is to say, you know, open your eyes, look around, there's something bigger here that goes on in your life than you're normally aware of.
Yeah, and I love your use of the word miracle here. I hadn't thought of that or brought that into this context. But because of the miraculous quality, I've tended to be a big fan, quotes, a fan of synchronicity, and get kind of excited about it, about the concept, about when it's in my life, when it's in other people's lives. And some time back, one of my listeners sent me an email that sort of reprimanded me about getting too enamored with synchronicity, that, and I guess he was pointing to the fact that the unconscious can be a wild unpredictable force, and seemed to feel like I was maybe getting inflated with the notion of synchronicity or something, and I kind of resisted that that email.
Yeah, there's the problem can be that how you take the synchronicity, being excited about them or being really interested in them, I think is good. I don't see that as an inflation, but there's von Franz, or Maria Louise von Franz, tells the story of a schizophrenic client who called her into this large ballroom to make a pronouncement to her. I think he called her in the middle of the night, and she went down there. And he's standing in this large ballroom and saying, I've just realized that I am God. You know, mm-hmm. Kind of a schizophrenic thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And as he said that, the crystal chandelier on the ceiling fell.
Wow.
Narrowly missing him. And he said, see, I made that happen.
I think he missed the message.
Yeah, it's too bad the chandelier missed him. It might have made it.
Then it would have been more evident to him.
But that's where it can get a little bit strange, is if your ego says, you know, this is happening because I'm a very special person, or because I have great power, or I'm a great shaman or magician or whatever it is. And I suppose you could get so excited about a synchronicity that you don't objectify it a little bit and say, well, what does it mean, though? But the excitement that they generate, I think, is part of the numinosity of the experience.
Yeah.
The reason we get so excited is because we're in the face of something unknown and yet very real, something we've just experienced in a very real way. So that can be very exciting.
Well, one of the things that helped to open me up a little bit more to that person's cautionary email happened way down the line, not so long ago, when I interviewed Stan Grof. And I assume you're aware of Stan Grof and who he is, right?
Sure.
And so I was interviewing him about a one of his recent books, which was quite autobiographical and quite interesting. And in it, he describes his first marriage and how there was this magical string, again, a run of synchronicities that seemed to just bless this relationship. How on the day that they were married, there was a big rainbow in the sky, you know, and there were all these other synchronistic seeming blessings that seemed to just sanctify this path that the two were on. And then once they were actually married, I may be exaggerating it, but it turned into kind of a living hell. And it was, and it was clear that it was a mistake. And so that, I found that very interesting. And he did too, you know. Like, how could this be? How could this be? I guess one could invoke the trickster archetype.
Yeah, it's possible. I had an experience in Zurich very early on, too. I was very, very interested in synchronicity back then and very interested in Chinese philosophy and how it related to synchronicity. And I was thinking, well, I could go to the university here and study Chinese, and that way I'll be able to read this source material. And I was telling my analyst about this because it was a pretty, you know, big step. And as I was talking to him, the phone rang, and he picked it up. And on the line was a client of his who was just studying Chinese at the university.
Wow!
So he said, "Well, there you go. I think you should try it." And it was a total disaster. I mean, the classes were in German, and you know, I was studying Chinese and German, and it was just horrible. And I thought a lot about that. But on the one hand, it certainly could be the trickster, and you can't. It's a mistake to say a synchronicity is saying I should do something.
Mm-hmm.
Rather, what it's saying is that this is meaningful for you.
Mm-hmm.
So my hunch is, if it's not just the trickster archetype, my hunch is that it was right to go ahead and get into that disaster situation because there was something I needed to learn.
And maybe for Groff, too. Maybe it was leading him to an important lesson.
Exactly. So we can't say that synchronicity is a blessing in that way, that it means a happy ending, this is the right path, I found everything I'm going to need. But rather, this is meaningful to me, and as my life progresses, I have to find out what that meaning really is about.
Uh-huh.
Which is a far more challenging kind of thing. So that's the third layer of meaning, if you like. The first one is kind of this, the world is bigger than you know, open your eyes. The second one is, well, what's the archetype that might be behind this particular event? The third one seems to be that meaning means that the particular image or synchronicity is about myself with a capital S. It's about my becoming a whole person, my individuation process. And in that context, it's right to work with the synchronicity and even follow it, knowing that it's leading to an experience of your own transformation and wholeness. But it's not necessarily what the ego is wanting it to be.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like one can work with synchronicity in much the way that one would work with a dream.
That's right. You would work with it kind of trying to come to some kind of interpretation that will give you a sense of what the meaning of that event is, which both allows you to understand it better and at the same time to try and work with it more clearly. Like the example I gave of working towards my own freedom in the context of the Jung Institute, knowing that that's what was the meaning of that event allowed me to continue to consciously work on that issue much more and to try and integrate what the synchronicity was pointing me towards.
Yes.
So they're kind of miracles, but they're not always happy ending miracles.
Right. Right. Now, I actually was reading in that essay that I was only aware of one essay that Jung wrote in the collected works. Are you saying that there's more than one? And I'm wondering, did the word crop up in his other writings, or did he just kind of basically write about it and then not much anymore?
Yeah, he just is. I think there's a long one and then there's a very short one, both in Volume 8 of the collected works, Structure and Dynamics of the Psyche.
Well, I seem to recall that he was aware of and made reference to the research that that J.B. Rhine was doing at Duke University, and he was, of course, the great American pioneer of attempting to scientifically study what came to be called parapsychology or paranormal or psychic phenomena. So what's the relationship between synchronicity on the one hand and what we might call psi or psychic phenomena on the other?
That's a very good question. Jung was definitely taken with Rhine's work, and in that essay he includes a lot of reference to Rhine. Some people now feel that he tied his wagon a little too closely to Rhine because there are problems with Rhine's research that emerged later. But Rhine was attempting to demonstrate that there was greater than statistical probability with guessing cards and dice and that kind of thing. And so Jung thought, well, this is a good way to open the door to synchronicity through the study of parapsychology. And sometimes he gives you the impression that parapsychology is totally a kind of synchronistic phenomenon because we're dealing with acausality. At least we think we are. There's a lot of different theories about it. So he thought that the study of parapsychology might shed light on the nature of synchronicity. And he was also pleased that Rhine seemed to be showing that there is statistical proof for some kind of parapsychological phenomenon. Today, it's not quite as clear. We don't know if we can define all of parapsychological phenomena as synchronistic phenomena. If you have an experience of a ghost, for example, is that a meaningful coincidence? You know, does it hit you? It may be scary and it may have a numinosity to it, but does it hit you as something that is particularly meaningful? Or is it, an encounter with another reality and it has meaning at that level? So it kind of depends on how you shade it. You know, if it comes together with a numinous feeling and a sense of meaning and a pretty clear acausal correlation, then I think we would call it synchronicity. But it's not a done deal.
Yeah, right.
Not everybody agrees on it.
Is there anyone in the Jungian world who stands out as sort of Mr. or Ms. Synchronicity? Somebody who has pushed the theory forward or elaborated it in any way? Or is it just kind of a concept that's out there and everybody works it in their own way?
There are a good 6 or 7 books on synchronicity. Some pretty early on. I'm trying to remember the fellow's name. He did the Ira Progoff. Do you remember him?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I know him for his writing about journal writing and
right.
Keeping a journal.
Well, he collaborated with Jung on a book on synchronicity that he brought out under his own name. So that was one of the very early books on synchronicity. And there's one, I think, last year that was just published. But there isn't anybody who's dominant in that field. What we're facing there is the sad reality that no one's really pushed the envelope much further than Jung did. We have Jung's theory about this stuff, and we have people who have written after Jung giving great examples, telling their life story about it, showing how quantum physics might relate to it, but our conceptualization, our understanding of synchronicity is pretty much the same way it was 60 years ago.
Okay. Well, are there any other ideas that come to mind that we should touch on before we wind down?
Well, the idea that interests me, as you know, I'm in my ally work, I talk a lot about engagement with these inner figures and psychoidal entities and what we might call spirits and allies. And if you look at the original conception of synchronicity in China, you know, the Chinese peasant on the road who throws the I Ching or pays a dime for someone to throw the I Ching for them, believes that what's going on when you consult the oracle is that the spirits are talking to you.
Mm-hmm.
That you throw your yarrow sticks, your coins, and it's not chance how they come out. It's the spirit that makes them come out a certain way. And so there's a certain kind of causality that they would ascribe to the spiritual world relating to synchronicity. And Jung speculated that synchronicity was actually a creative act of the divinity. It's when the normal causal flow of events is interrupted by something entering the ordinary world in a non-ordinary way. So one, again, this is, he doesn't really nail this down or reach any definitive conclusion, but one possibility he talks about is that, and this goes back to the synchronicity being a miracle, that when a synchronicity happens, it's the intervention of a divine force in your life. So,
what about the possibility of it being an internal force rather than an external force? I know that's kind of it gets to be a very fine metaphysical distinction, maybe. But
could it be
some part of one's own unconscious that is, in fact, causal in some way?
It's possible. Jung rejects that idea because he says that would lead to an inflation of the unconscious. He argues that the unconscious as a psychic phenomenon does not have any control over physical manifestation. So, for example, to say that the unconscious caused the scarab to fly in the window, he thought would be an inflation of what the unconscious is really about.
Okay.
But instead, what he says is, what if we have physical reality and psychic reality joined on a continuum of some kind, and underneath both of them is a third reality, which he would call the psychoid reality. And it's a change in that third reality that affects both psychic and physical reality.
Uh-huh.
It'd be easier if I could diagram that, but the basic idea is that something causes an archetype to get activated in my psyche. So I dream about the scarab, and at the same time, that same thing is activating a real scarab in the physical world. And because it's neither physical nor psychic, it has an influence on both of them.
Going a slightly different direction in these far out or close in possibilities, people who've studied and written about poltergeist phenomena, mm-hmm. Which often seems to happen in the context of a adolescent girl in the home, and people have drawn a correlation between that and poltergeist phenomena, with the underlying theory being that this young person's unconscious was somehow triggering these physical phenomena.
Right.
I don't know that I believe in any of this, but I've read about it.
Yeah, that's another possibility. Again, I think Jung would prefer to think that there's something that's not psychic behind the whole thing, because Otherwise, we would be saying, you know, mind over matter in a causal kind of way, or matter over mind. There's some kind of potential conflict there with the idea that there's a third realm that influences both of the other two. It provides a connecting link.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't say brain activity determines consciousness and consciousness determines brain activity, but maybe both are being determined by an unseen third that only manifests in synchronicity.
Okay.
So I find that idea interesting. I find the idea that maybe there's a spirit connected to a synchronicity kind of interesting. You could take that, as you said, on towards the inner realm, and then we would talk about it as an archetype.
Okay.
So there are a lot of different ways to play with this.
Well, I want to thank you for being willing to come on here and play play with me with this.
And it was a great pleasure.
Yeah, and it was my pleasure. It's fun to talk to you again. So, Dr. Jeffrey Raff, thanks for being my guest once again on Shrink Wrap Radio.
Well, thanks for having me.
I do hope you enjoyed this return interview with Dr. Jeff Raff on synchronicity. I got some new angles on the phenomenon. For example, I like the idea of linking synchronicity to the miraculous. Synchronicities do seem like miracles when they happen, and the other ideas that stick with me are working them like a dream and looking for the underlying archetypal significance. I wonder if you noticed a difference in this interview. Usually I have a lot more questions prepared ahead of time. This time I didn't have many, and we agreed to just trust whatever came up in the conversation. As a result, I think this interview was more conversational and interactive than most. I ended up enjoying that aspect. How about you? Dr. Raff mentioned a book on synchronicity by Ira Progoff. The title of that book is Jung, Synchronicity, and Human Destiny, C.G. Jung's Theory of Meaningful Coincidence. I looked for it on Amazon, and it seems to be out of print, but there were a number of reasonably priced used copies listed there. He also mentioned that a more recent book had come out in the past year or so. I sensed he didn't have it on the tip of his tongue, and I didn't want to put him on the spot. I asked him about the book after the interview, and he said he'd look it up and email me the title, which he says is one of the best new works on the topic. It's Synchronicity, Nature and Psyche in an Interconnected Universe, by Joseph Cambray. While I was poking around on Amazon, I discovered another which seems to be a collection of stories about synchronicity by a wide variety of authors. And this compilation is by Phil Cousineau, who I interviewed last May on Shrink Wrap Radio number 264, Beyond Forgiveness, Reflections on Atonement. His book that I saw on Amazon looks like it would be a nice one to have around. The title is Coincidence or Destiny, Stories of Synchronicity that Illuminate Our Lives, and that's available in paperback by Phil Cousineau. Don't forget that you can order any or all of these books by using the Amazon link in our right-hand sidebar, and that you can also use it for all your Amazon shopping.
Like what you hear? Show your appreciation by making a donation to keep this life-changing podcast up and running. Simply go to the Shrink Wrap Radio website and click on the big green donate button and show Dr. Dave some love.
Thanks, Michael West, for that promo. And thanks to all of you who have donated and those of you who will do so today. By the way, today is my birthday, so thanks for being here to help me celebrate. Since this interview was all about synchronicity, I just have to share with you the latest one in my life. A few nights ago, I was in bed, but not asleep, and I found myself thinking about my daughter and her children, my grandchildren. And I was reflecting that if my son, Christopher, and his wife, Melissa, had a child, there would be cousins. That's the first and only time I've ever had that thought. Cousins is not something I ever have given much thought to because I grew up without any real cousins. So I was aware at the time that this was sort of a new thought for me. I recognized it as such. And the next morning, we all went out to brunch with Christopher and Melissa to celebrate his birthday. And Melissa lined us up right away to take photos of us. And then after saying, "Say cheese," for a couple of the pictures, she said, "Say Christopher is going to be a dad." And it took us a few stunned moments for us to realize that what she was saying was, "She is pregnant. I'll have another grandchild, and he or she will be a cousin to the others." Wow. So this was a major synchronicity for me, having lain in bed the night before, thinking about cousins. Hey, there's finally a new interview on wisecounselpodcast.com, one of the last of the ones that will be there. It's an interview with David S. Rimmert, Ph.D., on forensic psychology. Dr. Rimmert's been a Shrink Wrap Radio listener, and he contacted me to suggest that he'd be interested in being a guest and had several areas of expertise that I might be interested in. And we had some conversations, and we really hit it off. He comes from a legal family himself, and he really knows the ins and outs of forensic psychology. I think you'll find it a fascinating interview. By the way, we do have a new transcript on the site, and it's of number 298, The Relationship Between Positive Psychology and Health Outcomes, with Lisa Aspinwall, Ph.D., so be sure to check that one out. If you'd like to get together for a video chat, look for me by name on Google+, the name being David Van Nuys, and follow me there, and somehow, if possible, let me know you're a Shrink Wrap Radio listener, and I'll add you to my Shrink Wrap Radio circle there. I'm still trying to figure Google+ out.
Hi, this is Dr. Arlene Diane Landau, Jungian analyst and author, and you're on the couch with Dr. Dave.
Thanks, Dr. Arlene Diane Landau, who will be my next guest, and more about that in a bit. I received a lengthy email from naturopathic Dr. Ralph Wood Wilson expressing his appreciation for my interview with dream worker Kelly Walden Sullivan and suggesting additional interview guests. So thanks for that, Dr. Ralph. And beyond that, I don't think I received any new emails since the last episode. Either that or my color coding of any such emails disappeared. I usually color code all my Shrink Wrap Radio email so that I can locate it easily later on. So without further ado, that will wrap it up for today. You can send your emails, as always, to shrink@shrinkwrapradio.com. You can also leave comments about individual shows in the comments area on the site. You can leave voicemails on Skype, where I'm ShrinkPod, and you can leave voicemail on our phone at 206-337-0622. Better yet, go to the Apps tab on our website and order yourself an iPhone or Android app, and you can leave me voicemail that way. Thanks to Jungian analyst Dr. Jeffrey Raff for sharing his insights and experiences on synchronicity. As mentioned earlier, my next interview will feature Jungian analyst Arlene Diane Landau, and we'll be discussing her new book, Tragic Beauty, which explores the dark side of the Venus-Aphrodite archetype. And we'll also be discussing her own experiences in the Hollywood film industry. Be beautiful and be there. Until next time, this is Dr. Dave saying, it's all in your mind.
You've been shrink-wrapped by Dr. Dave. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.